Hi, this is Sharon Brizalera, and you're listening to On Mindfulness on KKRN, community-supported radio out of Round Mountain, Bella Vista, and Redding, California. And today, we have two guests who are here to tell you about something that's coming to our communities, Circle Talk. And they're going to explain a little bit more about it and dive into the possibilities and promises of this exciting program. So Deb and Meredith, I'm going to have each of you introduce yourselves in whatever way you feel is important for grounding our conversation.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for having us. This is great. I was telling Meredith that I've been interviewed on quite a few different podcasts and radio programs, and it's one of my favorite things to do. My name is Deb Scovron, and I live in Boulder, Colorado. My background is in group process for many, many years, leading groups, teaching facilitation skills. I think that some of the most profound skill sets that I picked up were as a mediator. I did workplace mediation and was approached to do some programming in the aging space now 14 years ago, and really kind of took all my skills and training and facilitation and mediation and was able to utilize them in terms of being the lead creator of Circle Talk. I've always had my own consulting business, not always, but for many, many years. I'm one of the original remote workers.
Right.
And it came to me, however, at the time it was like such a fit for everything else that had come before. And so I was just lucky. It was a time and place. Here's an opportunity. And I was really happy to kind of body on with everything I had learned out in the field up until then.
Great. And Meredith, your background.
Oh gosh, kind of taking the ball and running with it from that standpoint of a multitude of circumstances throughout my career just landing me here. I've felt so lucky. My background is in healthcare quality improvement and medical home healthcare administration. And it was through my work in healthcare quality improvement that I was lucky enough to run across Deb and Circle Talk in a community care coalition, where this coalition was working on avoidable 30-day readmissions. They announced in that meeting that there was an opportunity to become trained as a Circle Talk leader. So I took the training. I wanted to do it on my own volunteer time, but immediately, you'll hear by the end of the show that Deb is extremely inspirational. I was inspired immediately to figure out how to connect the dot between Circle Talk and healthcare quality improvement, because healthcare, we need a whole lot more programming and services like this that are so simple, but intentional, low cost, and really make a difference. And then I can't neglect by also sharing my own lived experience with loneliness and social isolation. When I was 20 years old, I was diagnosed with insulin-dependent type 1 diabetes. At the same exact time, I was also moving from rural Nebraska to the city of Denver. Those two things meant that I, number one, chose to socially isolate myself because I felt like my friends really wouldn't relate to a long-term chronic condition like diabetes. And number two, experienced loneliness in a time when I was moving to the city where I knew nobody and didn't really have arms wrapped around me from a community standpoint. So I just am here to share that, to give hope and help reduce the stigma There are a lot of people impacted by this. So that's a little bit about me and what has brought me to Circle Talk and my background.
Thank you. And Deb, in an intro before our conversation, I'm going to introduce Circle Talk, but how do you talk about it? How do you introduce Circle Talk to people?
Well, if I give a very, very short backstory
Sure.
on how and why it was created, it's organic. It's an organic process. I was approached by a friend of mine who had developed a very successful social emotional growth program for K through 12. And she asked me if I could translate her work in a very loose way into the aging arena back in 2010. And so I guess the reason that Circle Talk came about was because my friend Rachel Kessler said, I think that this could go places. And she had a friend whose mother was horribly lonely, depressed, and isolated in a, I think it was an independent living community in Toronto. And she said, do you think that there's any way that we could get older adults to connect to each other? And so we piloted it. And we piloted it in a very modified way. We took the basic principles and made it fit for an older adult setting where people weren't getting up and running around, they were just kind of stationary. And we modified the curriculum so that, well, we thought it spoke to the needs and concerns of an aging population, but what we've come to find is that it speaks to everyone. So that's how I introduced Circle Talk as an extension of something that was already working for kids that needed the same thing. They needed to find a way to connect in a healthy way, in a deeper way to other kids. And we did a translation of that model into an older adult setting.
Place myself back into the time when I was moving in sixth grade from a different small town, rural Nebraska school and town where all my friends were to a new town. And that feeling you get going into a new place and feeling really awkward about how do I even introduce myself to these new people? That's kind of in the simplest form how I feel Circle Talk. We allow a place for people to introduce themselves in a way that forms connection and friendship in what might otherwise feel like an awkward situation. So we're not there to be experts. We're there to just help people come out of their shells when it might be otherwise difficult to do that.
And the other piece of that that's much more concrete for people who may never have heard of Circle Talk is it's a ridiculously simple idea. You get 8 to 12 people sitting in a circle, so everyone faces each other, and you introduce a curriculum of discussion prompts and activities that allow people to do exactly what Meredith just said.
Yeah, that having deeper conversations. And yeah, I was telling the both of you, I was trained and curious to see what my experience would be with a group, given, starting anew. And I was really amazed at the safety we created and the level of sharing that emerged from people who, some of whom came in saying, oh, yeah, I know you from this class, but hadn't really had any meaningful conversations. I'm wondering what struck you about the adaptation to older adults, what people who are engaged in this type of work might not think about when working to reach out to or serve older adults.
I learned that people thought because they're in their 80s and 90s and 70s or 60s, that the opportunity for deeper friendships, new friendships that can go deep, was never going to happen again. They were surprised at that I still can have a new friendship that's meaningful, deep, and new.
That's really significant.
And one of our quotes that I use all the time that I think really embodies that from one of our participants is, I have known many of my friends for 50 years or more, and still I feel like I know the people in my circle better, and I've just met them.
I'm wondering if you could describe for listeners sort of the structure of a typical circle talk session. There are different topics and themes, and you do different things, but what might someone expect to find if they came in, say, session two or three?
Meredith, why don't you take this one?
Sure.
Okay.
I think one of the most important things is circle talk is predictable, and it's a ritual. So when people have been to even one circle, they know what's to come in the future circles, because we follow a very intentional 6 steps in each circle. So like Deb alluded to earlier, the sweet spot of participation, we say, is about 8 to 12 individuals in a circle, aside from the leader or the co-leader who is holding the space of the circle. Each circle is 1 hour long. It's not something that goes on and on. It's an hour, and you follow those 6 same steps every hour. It's designed to happen one time per week. So again, that ritual is expected, it's comfortable, it's safe. So then within that physical circle is where we introduce the reflections and the question prompts that really allow people to think about their own experiences and their own lives. Deb, drop in with the quote from Parker Palmer about...
Parker Palmer he's still alive, a psychologist. I don't know if you know him, Sharon. He's really been an inspiration, and a lot of his principles are what we follow in Circle Talk. That really is just a beautiful way to put a punctuation mark on things. It's so true. And when I've introduced Circle Talk in other settings, and I'll just say, let's try it out. I'll introduce a prompt that seems so incredibly simple to me about, and we're all familiar with this prompt. I mean, where do you find joy in your life? And the remarkable thing is, how often does anyone ask you that? Do you ever have an opportunity to talk about such a simple thing, but such a profound thing, and have witnesses to that, and know that it's really taken in by people?
You're listening to On Mindfulness on KKRN, community-supported radio out of Round Mountain, Bella Vista, and Redding, California. You can support us on KKRN.org.
So when we talk about those six steps, it's warming the group up into that safe physical and psychological space to share, and then cooling them down and getting ready to exit the circle, but to come back the next week with the same energy. And so those six steps we talk about, the first one is just doing a calming, settling exercise. And there are so many ways that circle talk aligns with mindfulness practices, mm-hmm. but settling, just tapping into each of our senses and calming the nervous system as you come together in the circle to arrive and be ready to show up together in the space. And then the second step is a quick light warm-up question, just something that doesn't require a lot of reflection or thought. And we use our either 30-second or 1-minute muscle. So we model as leaders, keep it short, quick, light, and then move around. So that warm-up question is just real quick. And then we recapture and summarize what we heard last week in the circle, again, because it's so important that people feel like they've been heard and listened to, and what they've shared is important. We don't repeat everything by any means, but just a quick summary to keep the group grounded week to week as they're together, to continue strengthening that sense of belonging and community within the circle. And then after we do last week in the circle, we go into the main theme, and that's where we spend a bulk of our time in discussion as a group around that. For example, when Deb was talking about joy, that's one of our main theme topics, is joy. Within the main theme, you always enter in talking about the topic generally before you ask people to dig in and be vulnerable to share their own personal experiences. Mm-hmm. After you get through the main theme and allow everyone an opportunity to share, if they choose to share, it's not required, it's safe to pass, mm-hmm. then we will summarize what we heard in the main theme, much like last week in the circle, the second opportunity for people to hear what they've shared, slightly repeated, or at least validate that they've been heard, and then we close the circle. People often ask us, in 1 hour, you have 12 people together, mm-hmm. and you can accomplish this connection in an hour. Absolutely. And that's because we have six agreements for the circle. And one of those agreements is to use our 1-minute muscle so that everybody has an opportunity to share. Mm-hmm. And I would be remiss in calling out explicitly in these days and times of inequity being such a high priority, recognized detriment in our society, that when you think about a circle in action, one of the differences between circle talk and a support group is you have to have absolutely nothing in common with the people coming into the circle. Support groups, oftentimes, individuals already have something that connects them. With circle talk, what I like to say is the more diverse the group, the more beautiful the connection is, because these life themes, these universal life themes that we talk around, everybody has these experiences. It doesn't matter what your gender is, or your race, or ethnicity, or if you're from the city or the country, or your age. It's experiences we've all had, and it really does put the blinders up to differences and opens your eyes wide to what we share in common, what we have in common, despite mm-hmm. some of those perceived differences.
So, or an environment with so much polarization, the structure seems to really hold both the ability to have differences and the opportunity to see shared both experiences or values. What do you think it is about the design and structure that makes it a place where people can come to and across potential divides?
Field testing. Field testing themes and topics. I did not realize how important that was when we were crafting the curriculum to have men look at it and reflect back. I mean, at first we had poems in there that just spoke to women. And I would get that feedback, and this was back in like 2011, that it was too feminine of a curriculum, mm-hmm. that it needed to be, you know, we needed to level the playing field in terms of what kinds of prompts we used and materials. So the field testing was, you know, we kind of came into it with, we're not going to take any perspective on religion, on politics, on any, you know, current cultural trends. We're just going to go straight to what's most universal for people. Well, life choices are universal. Giving thanks and having cherished things and people and experiences in our lives are universal. So we broadened out our questions and our, you all know what this means, our third things, but our materials to enter into a theme, our poems and short stories, to make sure that they spoke culture across the board culturally, at least in this country. If there was ever an adaptation for a different country, we would have to take a look at how culturally competent we were in selecting those materials. But I think that there's just some basics out there that don't have to do with what religion we were raised in, what sure. socioeconomic status we were raised in, exactly what Meredith's saying. They just speak to the human experience. Mm-hmm. And so we tried and tossed out a lot of stuff at the front end before we codified the curriculum back in 2015.
Mm-hmm. You know, you both mentioned, and the training really emphasizes the way this curriculum and an opportunity, let's say, addresses the epidemic of social isolation. And this was an epidemic, you know, the Surgeon General recognized prior to COVID, even. I'm not sure when the Surgeon Generals came out, but it was an issue prior to COVID. And I'm wondering, you know, that's a term and we talk about it, sometimes without really reflecting on what it means. In what ways have you seen that social isolation either manifest for the older adults who have been in your circle, or sort of how it's impacted them to make it a bit more real for people who think, yeah, social isolation?
Sharon, in the world of the healthcare arena, things tend to always be spelled out very concretely, mm-hmm. right? And so when the U.S. Surgeon General released this advisory on loneliness and isolation, there is a lot of technical language that officially spells out what loneliness and isolation is. I think one of the most important things to understand is that there is actually a difference. I think oftentimes it's bucketed into the same category. Loneliness is how, as individuals, we perceive the relationships in our lives. How good are the relationships? How many do we have? And what are we getting out of the relationships? And if we perceive that we don't have enough of those relationships that provide structure, function, and quality, then we are essentially subjectively assigning loneliness to ourselves, where social isolation is objective and it is more measurable than loneliness has historically been, because there are measurable factors like how many friendships do you have? How many groups are you a part of? How often do you participate? How high quality are those? And so the U.S. Surgeon General's announcement really called that difference to light, all to say that generally when you bucket them together, they impact health and health outcomes very similarly. And the U.S. Surgeon General has called out explicitly that in that arena of poor health outcomes is people who are lonely and isolated die earlier. Regardless of what they're dying from, they don't get to live as long. Cardiovascular and heart health is significantly impacted. High blood pressure, diabetes management, infectious diseases like COVID, for instance. And the impact of those who were lonely in COVID versus those that didn't feel like they were lonely. As an example, there are stark differences in those situations. Cognitive function, developing dementia is something that has been proven. It comes on faster and earlier for those that are socially isolated and lonely. Depression, anxiety, suicidality. There are hard and fast numbers behind all of this. In a way that, all summed up, the Surgeon General says has more of an impact on our survival and our health than smoking 15 cigarettes each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
That tells a pretty strong story. And we've focused on smoking cessation for years because we know the impact on health, yet loneliness and social isolation have really just entered mainstream as being risen up as an issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I recently reread the first few chapters of Vivek Murthy, who's the Surgeon General's book, Together, because I was writing a blog for our newsletter, Comfort Food. And just to, you know, to put a punctuation mark, 10 punctuation marks on what Meredith just said, you know, he talked about doing a listening tour around the country when he was first named Surgeon General. And he heard about all these chronic illnesses, diseases, suicide rates, and addiction. And he realized that the common thread, what was the common thread running through all of them? It was disconnection, isolation, loneliness, that was the root. Not the root necessarily, but it was the commonality that they all shared, that we were living, you know, existing in this soup of disconnection and didn't know how to get back from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which makes me a little crazy, because we read so much about, oh, coalitions and foundations and initiatives and broad brushed approaches to the issue of social isolation and loneliness, but you don't hear many very specific, hard, concrete approaches like Circle Talk that we know work.
You're listening to On Mindfulness on KKRN, community-supported radio, out of Round Mountain, Bella Vista, and Redding, California. What have you seen, Deb, without, of course, breaking confidentiality, but some stories or cases of people you have seen really become more connected as a result of Circle Talk, ways that people changed, how it impacted them?
Well, I'll tell one, and then Meredith needs to tell one at least, because we've both been kind of brought to our knees around what we've seen in community. And Lou was very entered skilled living and became very depressed immediately. I knew his son, who said to me, "You know, my dad, I don't think he's going to make it through the year. I feel like he is unable to find anybody to talk to. He only talks to me, and he's becoming very withdrawn and depressed, and it's not him." So we introduced Circle Talk into that particular setting. And I am hearing, and Meredith is actually leading that group now. His son came back to me and said, "It has been the most enriching time for my dad and I," because his son attends. We encourage family members to come, caregivers to come. And he said, "My dad and I have grown so much closer. It has opened up so many conversations that aren't about, 'Dad, what did you eat today? Dad, how do you feel today? Dad,' you know, kind of the basic adult, you know, conversations that we would fall into." He said, "We've actually rediscovered each other through this program, as a son and as dad." And I love that. That's just one out of many. Meredith, you've got more in your back pocket.
Ooh, this is where tears come to my eyes. As I'm listening to Deb and having that experience with Lou and his son, and they've provided us consent to be able to share their story. One example, we mentioned that gratitude is one of the life themes that we talk about in Circle Talk, and in one of those circles with Lou and David, his son, one of the questions is, tell us about someone you'd like to thank in your life, someone who's made a difference, and why would you thank them? And Lou physically turned to his son and spoke gratitude right to David right there in that moment. And you could sincerely feel what the moment that the two of them were in right there. Just that presence and that strong emotion. I was doing a circle in a continuing care retirement community with older adults, and we have data that says this is the outcome, but the story I tell kind of paints that picture. In the very first week, I would come to the facility, set up for the circle, and the facility would help people get there, and they showed up about 5 minutes early for the circle. They've been living together physically, many of them, for years, but they would show up about 5 minutes early, kind of sit awkwardly in the circle in their chair and look around, and nobody's really talking. And then by the second and third week, I would show up 30 minutes early, and they would start coming about 15 minutes early, and they'd at least start having a little bit of conversation between themselves. Weeks 4 or 5, fast forward, I show up 30 minutes early and walk into the facility, and a majority of the group is already sitting at a table in the foyer outside of the room where we have it with their coffee, juice, and water, and they are conversating amongst themselves without having anyone facilitate that conversation. That is our ultimate goal with Circle Talk, is establish the sustainability of the relationship such that whether you have Circle Talk happening or not, you now have the confidence to have the conversation. You know how to participate in the conversation, and you start to care for your neighbors in a whole new way. And that's why we have our tagline, simply as enter as strangers and leave as friends.
We can talk until the sun goes down, until our face is blue, about people coming together and connecting and forming relationships. But unless you create a place and a space for that, in most circumstances, you will not find that happening in a regular, consistent, and meaningful way in our society. You know, we just don't have, you know, coffee shops, people meet who they know at a coffee shop. You know, I'm just trying to think of, you know, I make a point of wherever I am in a public space, looking around and seeing how I can connect appropriately with a stranger. I mean, it's just, it's like a really interesting thing how people love it, but how very few people do it first. And when you magnify that into 10 of us every week meeting regularly with a really juicy topic and a good process to hold us, you've all of a sudden something pretty special is going on.
And Meredith was speaking about skills and, you know, habit and getting to know people. And what you mentioned earlier was spoke to me about this hope or this new idea that maybe even if I'm 70 or 80, I can find new friends, even if I had, I thought that wasn't possible. So there's a confidence element to that too, as well as some scripts. You know, many of us appreciate in new terrain having scripts. And it sounds like that has shaped you in a way that it comes more naturally. Maybe not. Maybe that's something you always have done. But I'm wondering how it has oriented you differently after years for both of you of this practice.
That people's stories are so interesting, and there's just so many ways into a person's story if you're asking the right questions. I talk in our training program about the idea of free information. So here's free information for women: shoes. Okay. Women love to talk about their shoes, but there are so many stories behind those shoes that it's like the perfect way, if you're just kind of sitting in a place where there's all strangers and you actually like the shoes on the person next to you, people always want to talk about that. And that leads into all kinds of other conversations, as far as I'm concerned. I could suss out a person's entire last 10 years based on one question about their shoes. But asking questions is, you know, the key to the curriculum. It's the key to opening up the door to all kinds of information about people that they have, you know, people just aren't asked questions about themselves. They say the best, and I'm not saying I'm a great conversationalist, but I do try to ask more questions of others than talk about myself. I just find that I am more in the human soup that way. And so that's always been a style of mine.
Something I think that's worth calling attention to is we've talked about how circle talk can be an entry into gaining the confidence to form new relationships. In the beginning, Deb also talked about building this off of a kindergarten through 12th grade curriculum, which touched on anti-bullying. And if you think about older adults moving into long-term care, there are actually very similar circumstances that look a whole lot like bullying. And I've seen that play out in the circles where I've done them in retirement communities, where all of the assumptions and existing stories about others created a barrier.
But the other element of conversations is listening. And I'm wondering what you see circle talk offering in terms of listening as a practice or fostering that listening. And I'm thinking there was one woman who didn't know about circle talk at all and told me she'd be interested in the next one and she wanted to practice listening, which I found very interesting. But talk to me about the role that listening plays and learning more about that essential practice.
We teach a couple of core skills that are really based on the principle of you can't reflect back to a person unless you listen deeply. And when you talk about the practice, listening is a practice. When I was trained as a mediator, it was described as an attitude. That you have to come into a situation with a certain attitude of openness and non-judgment and being able to do Aikido, just let things go right over your right shoulder. If instead of landing on you and instead of absorbing what the person is saying, your job is to deeply attend to that person. Listen as if your life depended on it and not take it in. So it's a mindful practice. It's if you're not sure you like what you're hearing, be quiet. Breathe through your nose. Calm yourself down. Let the person know you're not sure if you even are ready to respond to that right now, but you're listening. You're still with them. It's a lifelong skill to cultivate. It's not easy. I feel like Circle Talk has, with its tr leader training program and the way the curriculum is structured, we have set up everything we possibly can to make listening possible, with what we're talking about, how we're asking people to talk about it, and the role we've given leaders. It sets up all the positives for a good listening environment.
And what
And
about,
I
oh, go ahead. I was going to ask, what about the participants too?
Yes, so the participants, absolutely. And growing on what Deb just shared, in this space of social isolation and loneliness and disconnection, the importance of physical environment and built environment is really key. So just the shape of the group being in a circle so that everyone can see as they're sharing, absolutely is of key importance, and removing any physical or structural barriers that might prevent people from showing up in a way where they can truly feel like they're being listened to. Or that we as leaders can listen ourselves. To the point of the participants, it's all through modeling what we do as leaders, what we show our participants and how we show up as a leader, they will follow, and they'll follow. Doesn't take a lot of work to reinforce them showing up that way, because we're modeling that that's how we show up together.
Everything I learned as a facilitator, I learned from watching other great facilitators. It's like, that's the only way you can learn, is to see somebody else handle a tough situation and how they do it, how they let something land in a group and what they do with it. So yes, the modeling piece is, it's all eyes on the leader when things go right and when things go wrong.
Yeah. Well, and I also have a sense that for participants, I've had some people in my group come and say, you're going to have to tell me because I go on and on. And they, in fact, do have that tendency, but they're aware of it and they don't want to do it as much. And it feels to me that the agreements, we're going to do 1 minute, that everyone's going to have their turn, that you are telling your story and not having to respond to others. You can take it in. But you're not going to have to defend anything that you said, you know, not there, be questioned. Also really allows people to settle in and either not be anxious about what they're going to say. They're providing something to people that they're being given as well. I'm wondering your thoughts about that.
When I was talking earlier about those six steps and the settling exercise that we do, I think that's one of the most perfect examples of how we arrive into this space of listening and presence and really tapping into those senses we mentioned. But when you're talking about mindfulness practices and listening and modeling as leaders, for example, in that settling, we specifically prompt pausing. We specifically asked people to breathe in, breathe out, so that they're audibly cued to do that, because we forget to breathe.
We do.
And that's another part of the very intentional design, that by starting the circle itself in that space of mindfulness, peace, calm, breathing, then the hope and what we see demonstrated is that can be carried throughout the entire hour together, kind of that same sense.
You know, that structure of our training program, I love the coaching part of our program. I mean, the virtual is also very informative. However, the coaching is great because it allows Meredith and I to show kind of that mindset, that attitude around, you know, how to get people to open up and feel and really lower the adrenaline levels. You know, when we're doing training, you can see the anxiety in new trainees, like when we ask them to take on parts of leading a circle. And it's really contagious to when you can look at someone else and realize that you can calm your mind and your body if they're calm.
Mm-hmm.
And those adrenaline spikes, I know from doing a lot of training in the conflict area that you can't think if you have adrenaline in your system. It just your brain loses blood. You can't think at all. And so we get people into a place of serenity, I hope. The cool thing about the settling that I got feedback on almost immediately many years ago was that people who live in long-term care settings do everything in a group, and they never get to sit quietly in a group. And it was a remarkable shift that those first few months when we were piloting the program and we realized that this was so soothing and calming to people.
Many Circle Talk leaders are working professionals. Some are volunteers. As much as it benefits the participants of the circle, for me, 100% of the time, it's a huge benefit for me to start the circle out that way because oftentimes I've been in interstate traffic or I've had five meetings in the morning before I show up to do the circle. And so it also just really is a reminder for me as a leader to get myself into that space along with the participants, because it's hard in our workplaces and our busy environments, just like it is with the participants.
Sure. Well, sometimes we offer a mindfulness practice to listeners, and I'm wondering if there's one of those brief settling practices that you could lead us in as we close.
So let's close our time together. Just put both feet on the floor. Relax your shoulders. You can do that by placing your hands on your lap. Take a couple of deep breaths. Gently close your eyes if that's comfortable for you. Gaze at something comfortable in the distance. Imagine an open window and a breeze brushing gently on your face. All of the tensions from the day, those distractions are leaving your body and move out of the room through the open window. Breathe out any distractions or concerns. Just be here. Feeling the breeze and settling in. Breathe in. Breathe out. Slowly rub your hands together and open your eyes. And you're ready to move on to the rest of your day. Normally, that's how we enter into the circle, and that's we typically end by rubbing your hands together. Welcome to the circle. You hear the change in energy. You've just asked people to relax. Now use touch, use feel, tactile cueing to become alive and energized and ready to share.
That's a great way to end as well. And before we do, is there anything else I should have asked you about or that's important to say as we end our conversation?
I would just say if there's any listeners in your audience that would like to lead a program that is pretty beautiful for connection and depth, contact us, check us out. And I just believe that this program attracts the right people. And if you're interested, you're the right person.
So much can be said through the felt experience of Circle Talk. On our Circle Talk homepage, The second video down is Circle Talk in Action. If you take 5 minutes out of your day to do some deep breathing and allow a few moments of joy to come into your life, hit play on that video and you will feel and see what happens in these circles. And it will say more to you than we've said in the last hour together by far.
Well, Deb and Meredith, thank you so much for your time here, for being on Mindfulness. And we will definitely put links in our show notes about your organization.
Thank you. Thanks. Sharon. It's been lovely.
Sure. You've been listening to On Mindfulness on KKRN, kkrn.org, community-supported radio. On December 3rd, friends of KKRN Community Radio will have a unique opportunity to support your favorite community radio station through KKRN's own Giving Tuesday. This special day will be held on Tuesday, December 3rd. You don't have to wait, though. You can donate right now at kkrn.org. Click the donate button or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. Every gift you give to KKRN goes towards paying our expenses. We are an all-volunteer group and do the work to keep KKRN on the air in Shasta County and beyond. If you have any questions about KKRN Giving Tuesday or want to know more about listener-supported KKRN Community Radio, please call 530-941-9689. Give where you live.